Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Diva of Days of Our Lives. I will be interviewing former Days of Our Lives Emmy-winning head writer, Sherry Anderson Thomas. Sherry is coming out with a series of novels based on Days of Our Lives characters. The first novel, A Secret in Salem, is coming out next week. You can pre-order the book and the whole series on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. You can read the book online on the Days Insider website. If you would like to call in and talk to Sherry, call 914-338-1239. Blog Talk Radio is Skype friendly. You can also ask Sherry a question in our chat room. Follow us daily at our blog at divadaysofourlives.blogspot.com. On Facebook, you can find us at Diva Days. Also, we are on Twitter at Diva Dole. You can also find Sherry on Facebook and Twitter. Well, I just bought my book on Barnes & Noble on Monday, so I can't wait to get my book. And I recommend that everybody get it, especially if you have a friend that's a Days of Our Lives fan, especially who likes the, I refer to it as the old school Days of Our Lives, someone who's a fan of the super couples. I really recommend it to a friend. And joining us with Sherry is my co-host, Mary Ann.
Hi, everyone. Hi,
hello.
Gary.
Hello, everyone. Hello.
And we have Sherry.
Hello.
So how's it going, Sherry? I mean, you've been on a media blitz last week, and you must be so exhausted.
Well, you know, it is funny. It's exhausting, but it's also exciting because it kind of takes me back to writing the book again. And, you know, it was really, really a great experience to write that book. And now I'm in the midst of the second one, which is also equally exciting in a totally different way.
How did the idea of the book series come about? Who came up with the idea originally, and how did you get involved?
Well, what happened is I think Days of Our Lives, as everyone is, was looking for new ways to promote the show and for, you know, ways to probably spark interest in the old fans and grab some new ones. And Ken Corday had talked a couple of years ago, I think he said before, to Jim Riley about a story about his family, which got him thinking about writing a memoir, which he did. And if you haven't had a chance to read that, it's actually really fascinating. I was lucky enough to work with Ken's mom, Betty, who was an amazing woman, and it was really in the heyday of soaps, you know. So I was so lucky to work with Betty before Ken. And when Ken was doing this memoir, then actually Sourcebooks got involved. And I think just in their thinking process, they tried to think of different ways to get the viewers excited about the show and also satisfy the viewers. And I did not come up with the idea, but they came up with the idea of doing a series of fiction novels, women's fiction novels. And Greg Meng, who I've known for quite a few years, actually, he and I were working on a couple of other projects, and he mentioned it to me to see if I would be interested. And of course, I jumped at the chance because for me to be able to revisit all these people was great for me. I've loved all these characters for so many years. So that's how I got involved. And then, you know, they came up with this whole branding situation on the show, with all the books. And there we go.
Marianne?
I was wondering, when did you have any guidelines that were set for you by Days, like in regards to characters and plot lines, what you could and couldn't do?
Well,
or
you know,
in truth,
Greg originally, when he and Ken were talking about doing this fiction series, I know Greg and I'm sure Ken too and a couple of other people came up with a number of different ideas as to what it could possibly be. And so they talked about that with me, but then gave me free rein to do what I wanted. And, you know, because they felt that maybe I could have a different take on it. And having been the head writer of the show and trying to think of it from that standpoint as to if I were writing the show, what would I want to support that, it was really going back to a number of the characters that aren't there any longer and not telling their story in the past, not saying what already happened, what the viewers already know, but really talking about where they are now and creating storylines for them away from Salem, but still hooked into Days of Our Lives. So, you know, if you've never seen the show before, you can pick up these books and they stand alone. Yet if you've seen the show, there are so many things throughout the entire book that refer to history. You know, certain moments that, you know, as an example, John and Marlene and the Strawberries, you know, that come up a few times throughout the book. And just that's just one mention, and there are probably dozens referring to all the different characters that come through. So for me, it was very satisfying to be able to do that.
I was reading the preview on the Days Insider site. They just basically have one page from the I think the beginning of the book and one page from chapter two.
Mm-hmm.
And the chapter two preview was hilarious when you had Marlena filling out a medical history at a plastic surgeon's office. And I'm like, that stuff like that cracks me up. I love it when characters are put in real life situations. It makes it so preposterous. And then Marlena's sick and well, talking about her demonic possession and, you know, how to put that on the medical history. And that just cracked me up. I mean,
well, it was fun to write because, again, and I don't mean to interrupt, but when you're trying to define the characters for new people, you know, again, not wanting to cheat the current fans. And so it was interesting because somebody had written on my Facebook page that they liked Roman and Marlena when it was Drake and Deirdre back in the early days. And the thing is, this isn't them in the early days, but there are enough references to the early days that I think you get a sense of who they were then and a sense of how they've grown and who they are now, and they still are romantic and conflicted and, you know, sexy and funny, because they are. All of those characters have those elements to them. But you're right. When you try to compress, you know, 10 years of 15, 20 years of Days of Our Lives story into a paragraph, it can be hysterical if you're not careful. So it was really trying to make it not seem so preposterous that a new reader would go, this is ridiculous, but really get the sense of what happened, because all those things happened to her, you know?
Right. Oh, yeah, her medical history, if it was for real, it would be a book in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. Just trying to put that in two paragraphs was a little tough, but I think I managed to do it pretty well.
Oh, yeah, I was very impressed. I mean, it was just perfect, and it was funny at the same time.
Well, one thing I always tried to do in the past was add humor wherever possible, and it's, you know, it's in the real situations. That's what the humor's about, really. And everybody, it's not just all Sturm und Drang. You know, everybody's got sort of funny points of view and have to be self-deprecating about themselves and when they're allowed to do that. And you can do that in a book because you're explaining it. It's not just depending on the actor having to have all the subtext, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Marlene always had a nice sense of humor. And I was just going to ask a question about that. Are you the type of person that you have to put some humor into it? Like, you're just naturally a funny person yourself, and you just have to put something funny into your scripts or into your books?
Well, I think what I am, I don't know if I'm a funny person, but I do think that I am self-deprecating. I have a good sense of humor, and I think it's a little bit absurd and a little, when I say witty, if I can say that, but it's a cheeky from time to time. So I'm around a lot of people like that who are very funny. So, you know, I hate to say I love puns and silly things like that. And so when I'm writing, sort of the natural side of me comes in. You know, but, you know, sometimes there's a character that it doesn't fit, and then it's inappropriate. But I think most people have some kind of a funny side to them, and I hope that I find it naturally, you know, for those characters.
I'd like to take a caller. We have area code 416.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. My question is just, I'm wondering, my absolute favorite couple that you wrote for was Shane and Kimberly, and I'm just wondering if you're going to be doing a book on them at all.
Well, when you say doing a book on them, when you read the first book, is something going on in the background? I'm suddenly hearing things.
416, do you have the show on speaker?
Yeah, I'm getting feedback from somebody.
Yeah, you might want to turn your speaker off.
It is.
Yeah, that's going to do it. But in any case, Shane makes an appearance and talks about Kim in book one. And this is one thing that was an interesting kind of problem to deal with, in that, as an example, as I was in the middle of writing it, you know, there was the Alice Horton funeral, and suddenly a lot of people were coming back to Salem. And I tried to address that in the book as best I could and pick up where the characters really were. And Shane and Kim, you know, have been off camera for such a long time that their relationship has just not really been explored. So I really kind of, in the first book, isolated Shane a bit with references to Kim, and then they do plan to make pretty heavy appearances in book three.
Well, that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, so, you know, book one really has a lot of John and Marlena, and Jack and Jennifer, and Shane is in there, and also Sean and Belle, who I really never wrote for, but because they were off the canvas and they were on a trip around the world, it fit so perfectly into what I was writing that I really did a lot of research on them and added them, and I think kind of got a good essence of them, and like Chelsea's in the book, and but as I said, Shane is there, and then in the second book, really, it's a lot of Patch and Kayla. And, you know, some Hortons make some appearances unexpectedly, you know, to satisfy a lot of those older viewers.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and
then
the third one, there's a lot of Shane and Kim.
Perfect. I'm definitely looking forward to all of them.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yes, when you started to sit down, was it a series of three books initially, and did you start writing one, or did you start playing for all three at the same time?
Well, Sourcebooks wanted to know what the three books would be, and interestingly enough, because they were planning to do, as I said, do a series of three, and I had initially not intended them to be necessarily a series or sequels, but as I was writing them, and maybe it's because of my history as writing soap opera and writing continuing story, it became clear to me that when the first book ended, people would want to know what happened to the new people. And there are a lot of new people in this first book that then, as an example, Charlie, who we know, as you can see, is a, if you've read it at all, you know, is a pivotal character. And she actually introduces us to people in all three books. So she's really a strong character, a new character, who is, I think, a lot of fun. She's young. She's vibrant. You know, she's from a Bernie Madoff kind of family, so she's traveled the world, and she's got a pretty interesting perspective on things, but she's really, really a good, good character. I love her. So it became, yes, a series, and I don't know what will happen after the third one, frankly. And initially, just, you know, I had them planned in a different order. And book two, when I finished book one and I started book two, I went, it doesn't flow for me. And I actually started writing and went, no, if I know what happened now, what I knew things I added in book one, I went, I want to follow those things. I want to follow those characters. So I talked to the publishers, and I asked them if I could switch the venue, and they said yes. So that, it really sort of totally changed book two. And then what was book two now is going to be book three, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the plan now, because when I get to the end of book two, who knows what might happen.
Sherry, speaking of the new character of Charlie, I heard it's been hinted that she's related to someone in Salem, and I'm just hoping that it's not Stefano. But anyway, just
well, I'm not going to tell you who it is, but Stefano has children everywhere. I mean, let's face
it. But in my question in regards to that, do you think Days then would maybe bring this character or any of the new characters you created onto the show?
Well, you know, at this point, there isn't any talk of that, although at one point when one of the execs at Days of Our Lives read the first book, he said, this needs to be a movie. And I went, well, it would be great to be a movie, except it would be the biggest budget movie we've ever seen, because it's in Monte Carlo with 600-foot yachts and celebrities and, you know.
That's what they need again on Days.
Yeah, I know. So now we're saying, well, maybe we could green screen everything, or we could actually do CGI. But I would be thrilled if they wanted to bring the character back or over to the canvas. And the truth is, because of the way they've been written, that could happen. As an example, with John and Marlena, with Jack and Jennifer, with any of these characters, any of them could cross over very easily because the books take a very compressed period of time. So anybody could come over and go back and forth. you know, at least that's the way I'm trying to write them, because, again, I keep trying to think, if I were head writing the show, you know, if I were Dina and I were that group, I wouldn't want those to impinge what I was telling, the stories that I was telling. So I purposely tried to do that.
How do you write? Are you someone you have to, like, lock yourself away and be away from people, and you have to wait till inspiration hits, or do you just not do anything until an idea pops in your head and then you go and put it down immediately?
Well, you know, it's a combination of all of those for me, actually. And, you know, I'm currently a talent manager, so I have another job. And,
right.
But that is the kind of situation, too, where it's pretty fluid, because I either work at home or at my business partner's place in the Hollywood Hills. He has a beautiful place up there, and I sometimes sit right there. Or if I want to be totally alone, I go down to the Chateau Marmont, the, you know, infamous hotel in Hollywood, which is a great, great place to be able to, you know, so many creative people are there writing screenplays and doing all sorts of things all day long, and they really kind of let you sit and soak in the atmosphere. And that's a great place to get away. Or, you know, my husband is currently working, as you may or may not know, he's among other things, he's also the sidekick and engineer on a radio show on American Roots. It's called American Roots Radio on Sirius XM The Loft. And it's actually Bernie Taupin's show, and I don't know if you know who Bernie is, but he's Elton John's lyricist, who has written everything from Crocodile Rock to Candle in the Wind to Benny and the Jets to Yellow Brick Road, anything that Elton's really, you know, he's got a huge, huge catalog of hits. And they just have a new album out right now, Elton and Leon Russell, that Bernie wrote, I think, 90% of the lyrics for. But my husband and is his engineer and sidekick on a radio show, and so we're actually going up there again this weekend. And Bernie's got a fabulous ranch up in Santa Ynez. And while they are recording the show, I am sitting looking over the Santa Ynez Valley sometimes with a glass of wine and sitting there writing by myself. So it can be fabulous. That's in between when his kids are... who are adorable, Charlie and Georgie, I'm playing with them. But so, you know, it varies. And it used to be, I would say, what's my inspiration? And it was a paycheck, because on Days of Our Lives, they didn't really get paid unless you got it on paper. And on TV, you've got a deadline every day. And I did publicity before that, which was a deadline every week. So I'm pretty much a deadline writer. And because I was head writer of the show, and in those days when I was head writer or co-head writer, and I have to stress, always had great co-head writers, or there was a head writer I was working with. I was always used to having so much going on around me that I could sit and write a script while I was watching TV, and it was never a problem. So I can work in chaos if I need to. But again, a lot of it is thinking and just taking notes and thinking and taking notes and then starting, and suddenly in the middle of a scene it'll change. It's interesting, my sister is kind of acting as my editor on these things. She works for Coca-Cola now, but she was an English major and a teacher for a long time. And my mother used to be the editor until she passed away last year. And so my sister Judy, I adore tremendously, she'll say, where are these stories coming from? And I go, I have no idea. And I'll send her a scene, and she goes, well, where did that come from? I don't know, but two characters walked into the room, and knowing who they are, that's what they said. And that kicks something else off. So a lot of times you don't know exactly what, at least for me, I don't know exactly what's going to be happening next. I know where I want to go in the middle. I know where I want to hit the end. I know what I want these characters to accomplish. And, you know, but as I said, some other character might walk in the room unexpectedly, and I think, ooh, you know, it's like life. Things change when somebody else walks in the room. So as I said, it's kind of an evolving process for me anyway.
I was just wondering, who's your favorite author and maybe your favorite, like, work of fiction that you like?
Who's my favorite work of fiction? Wow.
Or favorite author, yeah.
You know, I mean, I hate to say right now, I love Dan Brown.
Hello?
Because I love his kind of storytelling and how quickly it all goes. But, you know, truth be told, I was never that much of a reader. I was more of a writer. And from the age of 12. And so I absorbed a lot of different things, but I can't really say who's my favorite writer, because the books I've picked up have been so sporadic over the years. And when I used to be writing 12 to 14 hours a day, when I was relaxing, I didn't just sit down and pick up a novel. That kind of wasn't what I wanted to do.
Right.
Oh. So it's kind of interesting, yeah. As I mm-hmm. said, but if I'm going to pick up a novel now, if I see Dan Brown, I will read it. Or I enjoy Jackie Collins for, you know, a totally different kind of read.
So when you were growing up, is that when you just, did you notice you had a gift for it or just a passion for it?
Well, I think, it's kind of having a gift. It's like
mm-hmm.
anything else. And when you have a gift, you never, or a lot of times, you don't really think it's that special because
mm-hmm.
it's something that comes easily. When I was 12, I was the, you know, school reporter for the, local school reporter for the city newspaper. And it just always came easily to me. And I think I always had a good sense of people. And I was brought up in a really terrific environment. And I also grew up in Disneyland, which I think had a big influence over me. Disneyland was sort of my babysitter when I was a kid because we lived a couple miles from there. And the head of operations was my next-door neighbor. So I used to say to my mother, how often did we go to Disneyland? And she'd say, we went about 17 times, I guess, a year. I went, oh, okay. So when you're kind of surrounded by all of that whimsy and all of that
mm-hmm.
creativity, and then my parents were both musicians, and mostly in church, I have to say my dad was the minister of music, and my mother was the organist at a church that became very large. It's called the Evangelical Free Church out in Fullerton. And, you know, very well-known minister, Chuck Swindoll, was our pastor there. So, you know, people who are in those circles know him. He's one of the largest-selling Christian authors in the world. But I was in kind of that very creative, always that sort of creative environment. And I think
mm-hmm.
that helped tremendously in you know, spurring my imagination, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, with having your parents had been very open-minded and supportive of you then, since they were artists themselves.
Yeah, and it was, you know, as I said, my mother should have been a great jazz musician because she was one of the best accompanists I ever knew. She was pretty much self-taught, but, you know, had perfect pitch and could transpose on a dime and, you know, she was pretty amazing, and my dad, you know, would sing on the radio sometimes. But the funny thing is I was brought up very conservatively. And, you know, we weren't allowed to dance. We weren't allowed to play cards. We didn't go to the movies when I was really young. And then, you know, 20 years later, my father was an extra on Days of Our Lives dancing in Doug's Place. And I was like, what happened? Wait a minute. So what happened there? And my mom was an extra a lot, too, and, you know, Ken Corday and the whole clan were very lovely to them. So, you know, things change as you move along in life, I guess.
Oh, you should see if they're on YouTube somewhere.
Oh, that would be funny.
We have some friends. I think most of the 80s are online now. Probably about 83, probably till present day is mostly on YouTube now, yeah.
Wow, oh, my God.
Yeah, if you remember kind of the year. Yeah, you might be able to find it.
Well, as I said, because they did Days of Our Lives.
About every episode.
They did Falcon Crest when I did Falcon Crest. They did Santa Barbara. They would come and, you know, be extras, and they thoroughly enjoyed it. It was really great for them. So I was very lucky to be able to share that with them.
We have a caller, area code 941.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is Michelle Riley. How are you, Sherry?
I am fine, Michelle Riley. How are you?
I'm still awake, actually, doing my laundry. But I just wanted you to share with the listeners, what are some of the favorite stories for the super couples you wrote for? And what are some of your favorite character traits that you've endowed them with?
Well, let me just step back here for a second for everybody who's listening, because Michelle and I met, actually she was a fan of the show and a fan of mine, fortunately, and we ended up meeting, how long ago was it, Michelle?
Probably, Lord, it must be a decade, don't you think?
Must be a decade ago now,
yeah.
But she has been so tremendously supportive, and when you pick up the books and read them, you will see that actually I acknowledged both she and Jody Earhart, because through this whole process, they were also some of my research experts, and I would say, hey, wait a minute, let's go back and check, because I wanted it to be very, very accurate. So, you know, I have a big thanks for both Michelle, whose name I spelled wrong in the acknowledgments, and I'm sorry about that, and Jody for all of their help. But, you know, I think when you talk about the favorite stories, I mean, one of my favorite stories, and it really, you know, it was really Beau and Hope, I have to say, which kind of filtered back to, and it involved Shane and Kim, and it was all about Victor Kiriakis being Beau's father. Because that actually, it changed the dynamics, in my opinion, of the show pretty dramatically, because suddenly it opened up so many emotions, you know, and so many avenues for romance. You know, Shane and Kim, it just, it had a tendency to tear them apart because of what she ended up having to go through. You know, so that was really important for me. And with John and Marlena, boy, you know, the thing is, starting with Roman and Marlena, because I loved Wayne Northrup as Roman, because Wayne initially, you know, he was so, I hate to say pixie-ish, because that's a terrible thing to say for a man, but he had such a wry little sense of humor that it was fantastic. But then getting to John and Marlena, as soon as, you know, Drake came in, it was just a whole different sexual, romantic dynamic that it was hard to tear them apart. You know, I mean, you just had to always do that. And for me, I've always felt that, you know, I think that we're all capable of loving more than one person. I mean, we would have to be, when you look at people who've had wonderful marriages and one partner passes away, something happens, and they find love again, and they find it tremendously. But I think, you know, we love people in different ways, but there are certain characters or couples that are always, when I hate to say number one, but you always know that, that they are going to be the couple. There will be other people that can come in and out, and they can love them in a different way and tremendously and have wonderful relationships. But I always felt that, you know, it was John and Marlena, it was Shane and Kim, it was Beau and Hope. For me, I hate to even say it was Victor and Caroline way back then. You know, so, and Jack, listen, I didn't get to write for Jack and Jennifer that much, but I enjoyed writing when I was writing for them, and oddly enough, doing the story about when Jack had to deal with being a house husband and Jennifer, you know, was running everything. And really, again, dealing with the real dynamics of that couples have to go through. And I have to say, a story that I loved writing was John and Isabella, when I had a problem understanding how he could love somebody else as much as Marlena, and I don't mean to say he didn't. As I say, he loved her in a different way. But when Isabella, and it was Stacey Greeson, wanted to leave the show so quickly after they had gotten married, and I was just brought in, I thought, we have to get rid of her in a way that doesn't destroy them as a couple with her death and her, you know, and her not being able to come back to the show, which she said she would never do. So I think we handled that in a really lovely way. And ironically, we, you know, we gave her pancreatic cancer, and then ironically, my father died of that 10 years ago. So it was a pretty personal experience, ultimately, in a strange way. So I don't know if that answers your question, Michelle.
That was lovely, darling. And I'm going to bed.
Okay.
Thank you, girls, for having her.
Oh, we love having Sherry. She's wonderful.
Yes. Good night,
Thanks,
Sherry.
Thanks, Michelle.
Good night.
Bye.
Okay.
You know, but let me just address that for a second, because it's interesting when you talk about the fan relationship, because there are fans that really do enhance the show tremendously, you know, looking at it from protecting the characters and not just being obsessive about an actor or, you know, the show, but really understanding story. Mm-hmm. And it is so interesting to be able to listen to people and get their take on it. Because I'm sure all of you guys have, you know, things that you would like to see. And sometimes, listen, you say, where do you get ideas? Sometimes somebody says, well, what about that? And you think, oh, well, you know, that's not such a bad idea after all. You know, because we get ideas everywhere.
Right. There's a lot of fans out there that write wonderful fan fiction.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Just
you know?
As good or better than what the writers are writing on the show.
Well, you know, the thing is about the show, and I, you know, I want to defend the writers on the show, and it's any time with the writers on the show, because unfortunately, when you're writing a show, on rare occasions, Jim Riley got to the point where he really was pretty autonomous, and nobody really kind of gave him any ideas, you know, he directed it, and it was his vision. But there are so many outside people that you have to deal with, whether it's the network or the producers or whatever, that, you know, and especially right now in this economy with the budgets that they have to deal with, I mean, they're certainly telling stories. I've glanced at some things that I probably wouldn't write, but I might not be able to write them because they're doing them with such restrictions. The budgetary restrictions are just unbelievable. So considering that, you know, I think they're doing a pretty brilliant job, and it's one reason why I liked writing the books, because I had no budgetary restrictions. I had character restrictions. I had no budgetary restrictions.
Right.
I could write whatever I wanted. And fortunately, I got very few notes from the publishers, and really very, very few from Corday Productions. And, you know, it was really, you know,
perfect for
you. I have to say, when I got all of the edit notes that they gave me, it took me maybe 3 days to finish. So that was, you know, it was pretty, I was very, very lucky.
I lost my train of thought completely. Isn't that funny? Yeah, it just came out, I think, last week. I think Days is down to, you're talking about the budget. I think the budget's now $150,000 per episode. And I think
What it is, but it's just brutal.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I saw a scene the other day, and I don't even know, you know, the entire storyline, but I saw Vivian. It looked like she was, I think, I don't know if she's in the sarcophagus or whatever.
Yeah.
And there was a camera on her, and she's talking to Victor, and I thought, you know what? What a creative way to have one set. You know, as I said, it wasn't necessarily a story I would think that I would want to write, but it was so creative. And I thought, listen, you got to give them their props for what they're able to do with what they've been handed. It's unbelievable.
And they do it so quickly, too.
Oh, it's, you know, the speed at which it's done. I mean, yeah, now they do, I think, 7 shows in a week then take 13 weeks off, during the year. But they have to do it and get it out quickly, get out so that they, you know, it's the budget again, you know, and they've got to do it fast. So when you consider that you're really taping the first draft of a script and taping the rehearsal, basically, you know, that's what it's like. You know, it's pretty darn, you know, good. If you put any other show on the air and try to do that, you know, the primetime show, they have, you know, weeks that they do an hour. So to get an hour out the way they do is unbelievable.
So it was totally different than when you were writing.
Oh, totally different.
Okay.
I mean,
I
can't imagine. That's why people say, would you want to go back and write the show?
Somebody was just asking that.
I would want to go back and write the show if it was like it was in the old days, but I don't know now if I would. Listen, if they came to me, I'd think about it, but I think at this point I'm so truly enjoying being able to go up to the ranch and write for 4 hours and then have a great dinner and not think, uh-oh, I have a deadline in the morning, I've got a show, I've got to get out, you know, for Monday. It's such a luxury that, you know, at this point, this is really fascinating for me, and I just hope everybody enjoys reading them as much as I liked writing them.
Okay, we have some callers, and let me see if I can get someone on. Okay, we have area code 770.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi. Yes. Hi,
this is Angela Cook. Sherry, nice to talk to you.
Oh, hello, Angela. Hi, how are you?
Just fine. Looking forward to talking to you later, too.
I just have to say this, that I don't know Angela, but I did a chat last Friday, and she was actually an online chat, which she came on and asked some very salient questions, Angela, I must say. And then she had requested an interview. So that's how we know each other at the moment, right?
Exactly. I had watched some of the American Television Arts and Sciences oral history interviews a while back, and watched one with Agnes Nixon. And thought it was kind of interesting, and I know they also have one from Bill Bell as well as a writer. And they were, especially when the Agnes Nixon, in the earlier days when she was writing even for Another World and perhaps maybe as long back as The World Turns, she talked about, you know, how she was actually writing, and I guess these were still at 30 minutes, writing a good portion of the story herself. And that I walked away with the assumption that they really didn't have the structure of, you know, the head writer, the associate writers, the breakdown writers, the dialogue writers. I'm just wondering, you know, when you have that much of a structure like we have today, and I know the shows are longer, it's a much faster pace, I'm just, you know, has there been discussion ever about maybe moving away from the model that we see so much today? Because it seems like, it's one thing if I sit down and I'm journaling or I'm writing a short story just on my own, I can't imagine that I would be writing that, then giving it, you know, the big picture to one person, then having the next person take it down the next level down, and being able to get that done very quickly. I've just never been able to see how you do that. I know they do it incredibly well now, but I just wonder if they thought about going back a little bit more to the older days, or is it even possible to do that?
Well, you know, if it were my choice, I would say, and that's very astute of you, because I would say absolutely. I mean, it used to be, it was so different when I first started, and I was so lucky to be able to be mentored by Pat Falkensmith, who had worked with Bill Bell, who had worked with Agnes Nixon, who had worked with all those people, and it was such a different time then. But, you know, as an example, we had five dialogue writers, or five other writers, and then Pat, and then I was her assistant to start with, and, you know, you would give somebody a breakdown, and then they would write a breakdown, and then they might write a script. I mean, and you had a very small staff, and it kind of exploded in the 80s, and it really kind of started when we, Pat Falkensmith and Maggie DePriest and I, left General Hospital in 1981, and it was then that they broke up the head writer package and started hiring everybody individually, and until then, the head writer actually was a contractor who hired the entire writing staff. So we all worked for, like I worked for Pat, we all worked for Pat, and when she got fired, we all got fired, but we would all go somewhere else as a team, and you got to work really, really closely with each other, and you knew each other so well that, you know, you would know where somebody, you would start writing something, and you'd know how somebody else would be writing at the same time you were, and you'd just pick up the phone and call them. Now, you know, the writers are all over the country, a lot of them never meet each other, and I think it's just the nature of the beast, but one of the best experiences I had was probably in 82, and Pat was gone, and it was Maggie DePriest and myself and Marilyn Thoma and two other writers, and it was Dana, oh gosh, I can't remember her last name, Dana Soloff, I think, and one other writer, and between us, we wrote the entire show, and we would be sitting in one room, and you'd go, okay, I'm going to write this in Act 3. Okay, I'll pick up Act 4. And the truth was, it was easier because you didn't have to read 5 days of breakdowns, 5 days of scripts. And so the continuity, I think, now is a huge problem because there are so many people writing that you don't have the cohesion that we used to have, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So if it were, you know, if it were my perfect world, yeah, I would really trim it down.
But then a lot
of people would be losing their jobs. And there are a lot of writers out there who've lost their jobs with the shows getting canceled. So
right.
God bless those that are working and, you know, have to give them
a problem. Oh, absolutely. There are lots of us out there that have had all sorts of different job disappointments, I think, in this economy. But I guess it's, you know, it's like in any business, though, you know, if you're continuing to work in a model and, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not saying, because I can see what the limitations would be if you had small, you know, if it was more, you know, centered and structured, and you had that synergy between those folks, you know, that's, it's more of a jeopardy for them too. Because if one person, you know, if this lead person gets canned, then you lose that whole team. And then
you
got.
No, but in those days there were 14 shows on the air, and now there are 6, I think.
Right.
But again, it used to be if you don't like what we're doing, fire us, and they would, and you'd generally end up somewhere else. But it wouldn't be, we don't like what you're doing, so we're just going to add somebody to the mix that you've never worked with before. We're going to add a dynamic that is confusing. So, you know, for me, as I said, I like the old model. But
right.
Everybody else is doing it now, and it certainly seems to work on, you know, some of the shows. I mean,
it works for the ones that are on.
Well.
I wonder what the web series folks, you know, the folks that are out there now, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, obviously Days, I read the same Christian Science Monitor article that was referred to earlier, and it's
mm-hmm.
just amazing that they're taking something that was costing $300,000, $450,000 down to $150,000 an episode. But I wonder, you know, when you look at some of the budgets for some of the more successful web series, you know, those, that's still, you know, minute compared to even what, you know, say Days is having to spend. Now, right now they're on just on the web, but some of them have distribution rights now. I think The Bay has gotten distribution rights. I think I heard an interview with Martha Byrne not long ago, too, talking about Gotham, that her real focus now was trying to get it to television in some form or fashion. Mm-hmm. So these folks have got a lower-cost model. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but my guess is, and from what I can just see, you know, say, take Venice, for example, you know, there's not a staff of six people or even a staff of 16 people there writing that show.
Right, but I'm not sure how long are the episodes. Aren't they pretty short?
I think they are, but I think they're writing them all in a clip. You know, I think it sounds like what they do is that they're writing, then they get all everything together for that, then they target, then they're going to film, you know, X number of weekends, and then then they'll have. So I think it's kind of chunked. The work is just kind of chunked out. So let's say it's. I know that Venice extended their episode time. I think it's closer to 10 to 15 minutes, but so it's still a lot shorter than filling up, you know, I guess 40. 50 minutes, whatever they're filming now.
I think it's down to about 41 minutes, I think, which it might even be less. And it used to be, what was it, 44 or something like that. You know, but the commercial time now breaks in so much, too. But I'm just curious, Carrie and Marianne, have you seen any of the web series?
Yes, I've been watching The Bay.
And what do you think?
And we've only seen, I think, chapter one. I guess chapter two started today.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. They're only like 5 minutes, I think I saw three of them.
Yeah, they're
about
5 minutes.
One was a little bit longer. I think one was closer to eight, and I think that's from what I've read, the goal is just for them to go forward as being a little bit longer. But in any event, obviously, there's, you know, it's a very, you know, new model. You know, it's kind of like new television, so there's a lot of stuff you don't know. But I just think it's interesting that just in looking at the same models that we've got now that we've had in place for 20 or 25 years, that maybe it's time for some type of adjustment. I don't know, just from a cost factor. You don't want to plan for anybody to lose jobs, absolutely, but it's just interesting to me. I work more in IT, and I just, you know, we still have this same kind of concept, just, you know, just turn it around to implementing software systems and training companies to implement them. Yeah. It's the same kind of thing. If you break everybody down into specialists, then you've got a whole lot of extra time just to bring everything back together to make sure that you do have the cohesion.
Yeah, you know, I think if you have a new product, it's probably easier to do that. Like The Bay, as an example, it's easier to start fresh than to come in, as an example, on any of the shows. Because what was it on ABC? I thought I read something where they are trying to do not a recap show, but something like that, maybe once a month.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is they have to cut one of the writers' contracts because they don't have a show. So there's a whole big thing with the Writers Guild. And so you've got the unions in there. It's not as easy as we'd like to think to change those things. But, you know, I kind of agree with you. I think it's time to rethink.
Well, I think the other thing that it is also, I don't know that this is to be the case, but I noticed when ABC brought that issue up, you know, I started thinking, you know, because they were really sort of looking collectively at probably not the individual writers, but the total number of slots they have for writers across all three of their programs. And so you have to kind of wonder, too, as you see on CBS, for example, Young and the Restless, which is obviously most successful out of any of the shows, you know, by far still in terms of ratings, you know, every week there's, another two or three well-established, fantastic soap stars that are joining that show.
Yeah.
You have to think that there's some type of long-term strategy, because are they really planning to utilize, and are they even able to utilize that many actors and actresses on that program? So you start to wonder if they're not, you know, almost building like a little mini studio of, you know, you have sort of a pool, and then they diversify what types of projects those folks may work on and do something different. But again, I don't know. That's a much bigger question than I know we can answer. Don't want to take
it
up any more
time. It's very interesting that right now, I'll just say one thing. When you talk about that, because being a manager as well, you know, so many on the shows across the board, and I think everybody knows this, you know, they have gone to a lot of the high-money characters, and they're slashing salaries. And so, you know, you will get some of these actors who will come in who, you know, 5 years ago would never consider going in for a three-month storyline. They would have a three-year contract or a five-year contract. And now they will come in and sign up for either off contract or to do a, you know, 3-4 month story and then see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that, you know, they said that the money is kind of running the business now. But again, you look at Young and the Restless, which is a lovely, 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 lovely show, because again, it's, you know, goes back to the whole the provenance of all these people. And it's interesting when we talk about kind of the chain of command, when you think of Bill Bell, who started Days of Our Lives with Betty, and then Pat came in, and Pat really worked with Bill tremendously, and I was back basically mentored by Pat, and one of the people who I brought in was Dina. Dina was my assistant when she just got out of Pepperdine many, many years ago. So, you know, there's kind of this chain of command that goes down from the greats, I would say. So, you know, we were all very lucky.
Well, except it's just an honor to talk to you. I've been a fan of your writing and of the shows for a very long time. So thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate all you had to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, Marianne, we have more callers on. I'm going to try Garibay on, okay?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay.
I won't talk as long.
That's all right. We have Eric.
That was very interesting one.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, just
yeah,
I have a lot of people on hold.
Yeah, I've learned a lot. Yeah.
With area code 410.
Hi, Sherry. This is Michelle.
Hello.
A different Michelle.
Okay.
I've been a fan of the show Days of Our Lives since the 80s, and you were just talking about how things are written differently now, and I was wondering, when you were writing and you had storylines that would go on for months and months, did you know at the beginning how the story would end?
Yeah, I mean, I was, well, at least when I was doing it, we did. And I actually was married once before. I have my marriage now, and my husband then had been in the writer development program at CBS. His name was Joe Mineta, and he also actually was very, very good at story. But between all of those things and then working with Pat especially, you know, we always had long-term story that we would plan for, depending on the characters, it could be 3 months to 3 years. And what we would do is you might have a 100-150-page document that was your long-term story, and then once it was approved, we would break that down. In those days, we would break it down into 13-week increments and say, okay, this is Friday, that's what we're going to for Friday, that's Friday. Just in big, broad strokes, you know, it might be, you know, Bo and Hope meet, and the next week, Howie, whatever comes in. But you would just have the big plot points for Fridays,
right,
and then break it down that way. And now things would change because suddenly you might start writing and as I said, somebody walked in a room and a story took a different direction. But we did plan that very, very specifically. Now, I worked on General Hospital, you know, when Luke and Laura really sort of first started. It was really right after, if anybody watched General Hospital then, it was when Scotty married Laura to just before Luke and Laura got married. So it was that entire situation, working with Gloria Monty as a producer who was insane but brilliant, and Pat, you know, sometimes there are a lot of us in this business that are a little bit insane, and that kind of helps. But Gloria was fantastic, again, for story. Jackie Smith at ABC, fantastic for story. Combine them with Pat Falcon-Smith, who was the then head writer. And then we had outside story consultants that would do stuff too. But, you know, it was really plotting very distinctly what was going to happen. But during that time period, Reagan got shot, the Pope got shot. There were a lot of things that were happening, and suddenly they'd go, uh-oh, we're preempted, and suddenly your great Friday show ended up on a Tuesday. So Gloria came in and said, every day has to be a Friday. So we started writing as though every day was as important as the next. And, you know, that, I think, is one of the reasons the shows were as dynamic as they were back then, because we really, really, really tried to make every show critical. And it was a different time, you know, people didn't even have VCRs then. They were just coming in. You had three networks. You didn't have all of these choices. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have TiVo. You didn't have anything like that. So you had more of a captive audience, actually. But yeah, we knew where we were going. To a very long answer for that question, but yeah, we definitely knew where the characters were going.
And is there any possibility we'll see Tony and Anna in one of your books?
Well, it's an interesting thing to try to figure out because, as we know, Tony got killed off. But as you may or may not know, you know, Teo and I have become friends, and he and I actually wrote three screenplays together. And I was lucky enough to travel with him. He's a phenomenally interesting guy, and we traveled together to I'm fortunate in that my husband always, you know, gave me the heads up to go with Teo. And he and I traveled to Australia together. We went to Greece. We went to Istanbul. We went to Troy. We did a lot of really, really fascinating things. And so I know him very well. And also, I always appreciated his storytelling, by the way, because he's a great storyteller for those of you who know him and know him well. And then Leanne actually also became a friend, interestingly enough. And she is one of my management clients. So I'm very committed to the two of them, not only as people, but they were two of my favorite characters to write for because they're cheeky, they're sophisticated, they're funny, they're romantic, they're all of those things. So in the back of my mind, I keep trying to figure out how to write that book and make it make sense with what's going on the show. And I may just not have to worry about what's happening on the show, but it definitely... I'm going to try to figure out how to do that because they are some of my favorite people to write for.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle.
Bye.
I had a question about your screenplays. Are you and Teo still trying to, you're still working on your screenplays, trying to get them out there?
Well, they haven't completed, and actually we have them with a producer. We've had some interest. They're so very different. You know, one's about Greek immigrants in Australia in the 50s. One is the story of Heinrich Schliemann, who is the one who decided to put flesh on the myths of Homer. And then we have an art theft, an art forgery story that is absolutely fantastic. So they're very, very, very different. And as I said, we've had some really interesting interest from them. And right now they're with a producer, so we're hoping to see them get on the air. That would be fantastic.
Ooh, thanks.
That'd be good.
And I'm trying. Computer's not cooperating with me today. There we go. Area code 515.
Hi,
hello,
Sherry. It's Jody.
Hello, Jody.
It's Jody Earhart.
Yes, I don't know if you heard earlier, but I already gave you some props.
I did not hear that. I just got logged in. I'm traveling, so I just got back to my hotel, and I wanted to log in and hear what this is all about.
Well, as I said, I was telling everybody earlier, because Michelle called in, and I said how I really gave the two of you special kudos because you were such good and devoted fans and so cared about the story and not just being committed to whether it's Days of Our Lives, but just an actor, but it was really all about the characters. And that you guys really have kind of kept me on the right path here, with especially with book one and now into book two.
Well, you don't need much help, trust me.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, well, I know I have to ask a question, but first I need to express my gratitude for bringing John Marlena back to life, because first and foremost, I'm a John Marlena fan, but and second, I'm a Sherry Anderson fan. So.
Thank you.
Or maybe vice versa, because you birthed them, so.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
But my question is, will we see Austin and Carrie anytime soon in the book?
That it's interesting that you bring that up, because in all honesty, I kind of, wait a minute, I hadn't thought about them for a minute. And so obviously they, in book two, I wasn't going to have them as predominantly, but now that I'm not finished with it, maybe they will show up. But definitely in book three.
Ooh.
Okay. That would be great because I'm a huge Austin and Carrie fan, and I don't think they're on the show. And going back to the show, although I'm not really paying much attention to the show, I'm more interested in your book, so we'll go from there. But my other question is, do you think that we – I know you guys talked a little bit when I logged in about the web series. Do you think we'll ever see any of your stories come to life on the web or anything else?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, again, one of the execs said to me – you didn't hear this earlier, but said to me, oh, this should be a movie – And as I said, Jody is one of those people who has read from top to tail and commented on a lot of things. And I think you see it could be a pretty interesting movie. And I think that Days is looking to come up with other avenues. And so I don't think it's totally impossible that they wouldn't show up somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I would love a movie. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, to show up somewhere, you know, we'd have to see. But as you've seen, Jody, having read the book, I said it'd be a pretty high budget film.
Very, a lot of location shoots.
Yep.
Extravagant places.
But also a lot of romance and fun and, you know, and intrigue, I think, which is pretty interesting.
Well, that's what we've been lacking, so
yeah.
I would love to see that.
And, you know, when they talked about these books, I suddenly realized that I can't just sit down and write a simple story. I don't
right.
know why. Because they have a lot of different, as you know, they have a lot of characters and a lot of different elements. It's a lot of, it's like putting a puzzle together. And so it was great fun. And as I said, there are even things in book two that I had somebody glance at it and I said, do you realize what I've been laying in here story-wise? And they said, oh, no, my God, that's fantastic. Because I do try to put little beats in, which I think we used to do very, very well in the early days on the show. You know, you always were intrigued by, what's that in there for? And I always try to make sure that the audience gets paid off, you know,
mm-hmm.
so you're not cheated. So.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, that's what we love about you. So, I mean,
thank you.
I cannot wait to get the books in my hand and hopefully something further beyond that, too. So.
Well, thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome. All right, have a good night.
Thanks,
Jody.
Bye.
You know, can I just say something, and especially in meeting Jody and Michelle, and it was really, as I said, at a fan event that I first met them, and I've gotten to meet a number of the other fans and now kind of getting to know you, Carrie and Marianne and, you know, Angela who just called in. And it is so interesting to me to really see the depth and the intelligence and the care and the creativity of so many of the fans. I mean, it's really amazing. Were you saying, Marianne or Carrie, one of you, about, you know, all of the fans that write their own fan fiction? And it's
right.
You know, some of us were just lucky because we got hired to do it. You know?
Right.
We were at the right place at the right time and knew it, you know? So we were, some of us were just darn lucky.
Can I ask another question? I'm also a big Tony and Anna fan and Tao and Leanne fan. And you said about Tony being dead, so you wouldn't be allowed to change that and say,
oh,
that
I could definitely
he is alive.
Change it. Change it. It's just a matter
of right now, we don't know where Anna is. You know, like
where what?
Okay, we don't know where Anna is. Supposedly, Stefano has her somewhere.
I know.
So, yeah.
It's interesting because I actually was
or even
Arlene.
Audrey. You know, we bring
in
too. But
I was
speaking
to Arlene Sorkin the other day, and we were talking about the books. And she and I had actually written. I had written, but I was writing it with her. A spinoff of the show called, well, it was either Sunnyside Up or Keeping Up with the Joneses, which was sort of a Moonstruck for Calliope and Eugene. And she was suddenly, and I remember those characters together between Calliope and Eugene and Tony and Anna, you know, and Alex Marshall and all those. They were so much fun to write for that I'd love to revisit, you know, that group in a different way. And as we all know, nobody stays dead on Days of Our Lives anymore. So
Right.
Yeah,
of course.
So I
would love to be able. Somebody
we all know he's not.
Recently,
Tony's not dead.
No, I'd asked about the Demiras and were they in these books? And the thing is, so many of them are on Canvas right now. That the series, yes, there are people who Demiras that filter in and out of the books, but not really a focus at this point. But I would certainly think they could be a terrific. You know, if we go on to another series, I could think they would be a great place to start.
Sounds good.
And we'll take caller 913. So this is Anna.
Hi, Sherry. It's an honor to get to talk with you tonight. Thank you for taking the time to do this interview. Really enjoyed it. And it's taken me down, it's a trip down memory lane as you were talking about. I started out with Luke and Laura, and What got me to Days of Our Lives was Teo Penglis, because I had a crush on him from General Hospital. And I still do, 30 years later. I mean, you know, what's not to love about him?
What is not to love about him?
So I'm just really loving having this little, you know, thinking back to those days. And when you, I didn't realize, I wasn't sure what period of time you wrote for GH, but the part that you just talked about, Scotty and Laura getting married and everything, those, like, memories are so burned into my head. And I just, like, came right back when you said that. And I just thought, you know, those were the cliffhanger Fridays back then. I mean, you know, I could, because there wasn't the internet or anything, it's like you couldn't wait till Monday to find out what happened, you know. So this is a great era.
But that's one thing that I think is one of the problems with soaps now. And, you know, and again, the fans are so determined to know what's going on, and you've got all these spoilers going on all over the
world. Exactly.
You know, and I mean,
read
I
them.
Remember, I know, but I used to remember, and I'm just looking now at something as an ad about Survivor. And I have always said that I think the reason Survivor became such a hit when it did is because nobody knew it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was in soaps in those days. Nobody, you would, what happened yesterday? Everybody had to know what was going on.
Right.
And it's sort of lost that anticipation, for me anyway, because I know I can look it up and find it.
Right. Well, yeah, or watch it later on the internet. Or
You know, it was a very interesting time. It was a fantastic, it was an exhausting time.
Yeah,
and
the golden era.
but I actually, as I said, working on General Hospital at that particular point, it was a brilliant time to be. I mean, you had Tony Garea and Jeannie Francis. You had all of these, you know, and there were a lot of different storylines, by the way, and people would say, oh, they were on every day. Now you've got these actors who are on every single day. You see these characters. And when we used to write the shows years ago, you would have Tony and Jeannie, and you would have one on, you'd have each of them on 3 days a week or at the most 4 days a week.
Right.
And they would do stories that didn't always, they didn't have to be together all the time.
Oh.
So you got the sense that they were there all the time because people were either talking about them or you would see one of them, but you didn't see, it wasn't a repetitive situation.
Right.
They had fresh things to do when they saw each other because they weren't together all the time. So, you know, it was a different kind of storytelling because we didn't want to wear out the actors. Because, boy, they had a lot of stuff to do, you know. And I was fortunate enough, and Pat Falkensmith would give me a lot of the romantic storylines, you know, with Luke and Laura, you know, and I got to do, you know, like Wyndham's department store and all that stuff. And, you know, you forget about all those things and, you know, on the farmhouse and, you know, and, you know, all of the things and, you know, Luke and Laura on the run. And, you know, when you talk about how the story get created, Luke and Laura weren't initially supposed to go on the run. It was a Rick and Monica story that was planned for the summer, and then Chris Robinson got a movie, I think it was, and suddenly was going to be gone, and suddenly it was 7 weeks that had to be filled. And whether it was Pat or Jackie Smith or whomever came up with putting Luke and Laura on the run, and that's how that started. And otherwise, it wouldn't have happened. So that was one of those things where you say, do you plan in advance? Yep, but suddenly you'll say, uh-oh, you know, the actors are gone, so what do we do now?
Oh.
And it was one of the glorious times. And as I said, for me, it was great because I was sort of known as the romance person on the show, and I got to write all that great romantic stuff, you know.
Well, they need somebody like that back again, so please
think
about that.
Well, read the books. You'll see. They're romantic.
There you go. There you go.
And
yeah,
I have a question. Because when you talk about the books, do most people who are the soap, does the soap audience now want to read books?
Yes. Oh,
you know?
Yes. Or I plan on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think when I say it's a pretty quick read, I think you can, you know, it is a pretty quick read, but also engaging. I still say I was very, very flattered when the Sourcebooks editor finished the first draft of the first book and said it's the most fun he'd had reading a book in a long time. Because
cool,
it's not
cool.
Just, and he didn't know really what it was going to be or what he had no expectations. But it is fun. It's fun and
great.
It's dangerous and it's, you know, there's pathos and it's funny and there's, you know, it's exciting and, you know, every time you turn the page, you know, and I also have to say some of the people said to me, I really like seeing that a lot of the hot sex was between the, you know, married couples and the older people. And it's true. So, you know, it's like across the board, I think it's fun.
I think you might be feeling a need there for, as you discussed earlier, I mean, there are so many challenges, and having been out LA and seeing the studio and stuff. I mean, it's such a huge operation, and they're under such pressure. These actors don't even get rehearsal time anymore, so they do a phenomenal job given what the budget is and given their time constraints and everything. So I, you know, my hat's off to them, even though I complain about the show half the time. But still, it's, you know, but I think your book are going to fill a need for, you know, fill that a part that we're not getting from the show. Yeah. People who've always loved these types of stories that have always, you know, that grew up on General Hospital and, during the Golden Era and Days of Our Lives during the Golden Era, that, you know, we're still watching the show, we love the show, but we're not getting some of the things we used to get. So it seems like your books are going to bring that to this audience and maybe even expand on the audience.
Well, I hope so, and I know, I think, you know, Days of Our Lives and Corte Productions NBC was hoping that, too. You know, that's part of the whole point is to be able to have them complement each other.
Yeah, kind of cross-marketing and, you know.
Yeah. But again, as I said, what I find interesting is they really are also standalone. So if you've never seen Days of Our Lives, as you said, if you read the first two chapters and, you know, you talk about Marlena talking about all these insane things that happened to her in Salem, you know, there's enough references to it so that the audience who watched the show really gets it. And again, as I say, isn't cheated. You feel like, I do know who these characters are. And even the characters that I didn't write for before, whether it was through Michelle or Jody or Google, as I say, and or, you know, I have friends. Gregory Zarian is a great friend of mine, and he's still an avid fan. And I keep going, okay, wait a minute, let me go back and what's going on here? Is this correct? Because I don't want to cheat the audience. I don't want them coming back and going, oh, no, that never happened.
Yeah.
You're paying attention to history then.
Absolutely. Totally.
They don't have time to do it anymore, apparently.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, there's so much history and there's so much going on. And to me, as we've said, I think there are too many people working on it so that it kind of gets, you know, out of your grasp. But
I think you made a good point, too, with people being, you know, in this age of the Internet and everything, people can be in different cities across the country or the world and be writing for the same show and never even meet or never even spend time in the same room or never even meet the actors. I mean, I know that there are cases like that, too. So that explains why you can watch a show on Monday and on Tuesday the character says something the exact opposite of what they said on Monday.
I know, but you know that's a continuity problem. But and it should be caught. But the thing now too is they tape them so differently because, you know, we used to tape a show a day, and now because another of my clients is Melissa Archer, who's on One Life to Live, and you know, she's in, I would say, 4 out of 5 shows a week, but she might tape scenes 2 weeks apart for one show. And suddenly it's like, wait a minute,
Oh, that's
It's very, very tough. So considering, you know, all those things you're having to put up with.
Yeah, I do admire it. All the crew and the, you know, the writers and the actors. I mean, the producers, they all do a lot to bring that to us. And so,
The thing is, you're all going to make mistakes. I've said this before. I remember on occasion writing a scene and thinking, if the actor can say this, God bless him. But I have to turn the script. You know, I got a deadline. It's got to go in. So let's hope somebody catches this because, you know, you've got to get to the next one because it's another show.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, I have so many other questions, but I want other people to get a chance. So thank you so much for your time, Sherry. And you ought to do this monthly. We'd love to have one more often.
I think I'm giving you all the information right now. What can I say?
No.
I can kind of talk forever, though. You may have figured that out.
Oh, love it.
Oh, trust me. Anna can do that. So can
Marianne. You and Anna would get along
and
very
Marianne.
Well.
Anna needs her own show.
Marathon 3-hour conversations, Well, thank you again, Sherry. Really appreciate your time. And
well, thank you for calling in.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Anna.
Bye, Anna.
Bye. She's funny, but
Anna
could have her own show.
That's
with no guest. She doesn't need a guest. You mentioned something that I want to comment on about super couples. With you and the writers of the 80s, super couples, I mean, obviously everybody loved them, but as individual characters, they were fantastic. And like you were mentioning, Luke and Laura, they could do something else. They didn't have to be each other's scenes all the time. And you guys did that too, because you know, if Kim had a storyline that had really kind of nothing to do with Shane, you were still interested.
Yes.
I think nowadays with soaps, sometimes when the couple split apart, the characters tend not to be as interesting. You know what I mean? It kind of feels like Adam without Eve sometimes, and Adam doesn't seem that interesting anymore. So I think shows really aren't building character as much as they used to be. Like, they're throwing couples together, but it seems like the characters are kind of blank slates first. And I think that's
kind of a problem.
It's interesting when you say that, because even in writing the books, and as an example, there's a character in book two. He's a photographer, and his name is Vince. And I suddenly realized as I was writing a scene that I didn't really know him that well. And so I actually, because I thought, okay, I know what he does, and I know the dynamic I want from him, but I didn't know him. And so I started discovering him. And again, when my sister read it, Judy Spies, we love her, she said, I really like that, because I suddenly feel like I know who that is. I know him all of a sudden. Now I get it. So, again, you want to be able, at least for me, I want to be able to know the character that when they walk in the room, I'm going to get the same person every week. It's like you look at the shows on TV that are so fabulous, Modern Family, as we know. Mm-hmm. If you don't watch it, you all should, if you're a soap fan, because ultimately it is that, because it's all about continuing characters and well-drawn characters. But you know who they are when they come in. You know them. And that's, you know, consistency in the character. They might do something different, but their underlying being is the same. And I think that that's such a critical thing. And I got to say, Brian Franz was always great because he worked on Days of Our Lives, as you may or may not know, when he was at NBC. And he and then Shelley Curtis, who was also fantastic, and she had worked on General Hospital too. And in those days, you know, it was a matter of sitting and saying, let's figure out who the character is. Let's really know him when they walk in that room. So that's sort of the training that I had, and I think that's just so critical. And I don't know that they have the time to do that now, or I just don't know if, as you say, with so many writers, if they can all know the characters that well. I don't know.
Right.
I don't watch any of the shows that much because of my work schedule and now in writing the books.
Right. Yeah, I'm a huge Lost fan, and even with all the crazy storylines, it was always about the characters. And they would do something kind of off the wall once in a while, but you knew it was because they were evolving or they were learning, and it made sense. And they had couples on the show, obviously, and everything, but most of the couples were split up at least at some point in time, but you still were interested in that character.
Right.
And, of course, you always wanted the couple back together, but that's what I always loved about Lost is You just knew the character so well, and something was off. I mean, obviously, everyone would just complain, especially Lost with their big online community. It's like, why did they do that for? It didn't make any sense. But that's what I loved about Days. And the thing is with you two, your writing, you wrote a lot of soap couples and characters that were just atypical, and I love that. But some fans are kind of narrow-minded, and they think that all the characters have to be beautiful and they all have to be young. But, you know, you wrote Eugene and Calliope, and, you know, I mean, you wrote some fantastic characters and couples that were, you know, just, you know, off kilter a little bit. They were quirky, I guess that's the best word for it. You know, Alex Marshall.
Great. I love Quinn Redeker.
Oh, I just adore him. I wish they'd bring him back. I would throw a party.
Y'all would.
Yeah, I mean, we have Alex-type characters. Victor is very smart alecky a lot. Yeah,
my first crush.
Oh, yeah, Alex, it's such a compliment to you that these characters are so beloved, you know, 20, 25 years later.
Yeah, you know, and I've said this before. It certainly, I had a lot to do with a lot of it, but there were, you know, a lot of people had tremendous input. You know, there were other great writers. Maggie DePriest, for some reason, she doesn't get the credit that she should get sometimes because Maggie had a great sense of story, and she was wonderful on General Hospital and on a number of the other shows that she did. You know, she was very funny and quirky as well. You know, Leah Lehman, Tom Racina,
They were wonderful, wonderful writers. They are wonderful writers. And it was a matter of being able to have a sort of a symbiosis and work with all of those people. And again, as I said, Pat was crazy, but she was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
When you're writing for a character, do you feel like you're in their head? Like it, you're just so in tune with that character, you're in their head and you know exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I kind of have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And also when it comes to writing dialogue, I have to be able to say what they say, because if I can't
mm-hmm.
say it, I know they won't be able to. But
mm-hmm.
I think for me, I kind of have to be in that space, all of them. Because otherwise, because I when you say being in their head, I don't know that I'm necessarily in their head, but I'm in their heart.
Oh, that makes sense.
And, mm-hmm. you know, I've always said that if you're writing from your head, you got a problem. But
mm-hmm.
when you write from your heart, which is really basically the essence of the character, and it's the
mm-hmm.
emotion of that character, then I think you're going to be fine. But as soon
mm-hmm.
as you try to plot them rather than have them react to the surroundings,
right.
you're in trouble, for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about that. It's all about who they are in their heart.
Mm-hmm.
Do you put yourself into any of the characters?
Oh, yeah,
all of them. Yeah, all of them? Okay,
oh,
a
yeah.
little bit of yourself in each of them, yeah.
Yes.
Is,
oh, yes,
is any certain character more you of any of the characters you created or not?
Well, boy. It usually
you
probably
could pick one.
Comes down to more, probably Marlena, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would say if you could blend Marlena and Anna. Probably.
Oh, interesting.
If I were doing that,
I like that. Yeah.
You know that work, because as I said, Anna to me is sort of could be sort of guileless, but I'd like to think she is, and also I think funny and a bit sophisticated, and I think Marlena is also, you know, she's got such a great heart and a good intellect, and I think she's very grounded. So I think, you know, Marlena is kind of the grounded side of me, and Anna's sort of the frivolous side. If I had to say.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my friend Dama had this question. I've always wanted to know the answer to this, too. What exactly is the difference between a manager and an agent?
Oh, okay. You know, it was. I always say this.
Yeah.
It was explained to me actually by a young client's mother one time in the clearest way I could that I've heard it, and that is that the agent is a salesperson and the manager is research and development. So, and that's really what it is. An agent is licensed by the state, and they seek employment. They're the
mm-hmm.
ones who go out and pitch you for a job. They're the ones who negotiate the job. They're the ones that's their job. They're the
mm-hmm.
negotiator. They're the ones that get you the work. Your manager mm-hmm. works with your agent, makes sure the agent's doing their job. They make sure that you're in the best shape you can be in. If there are projects out there that they can let the agent know about. But a manager basically doesn't procure work for you because you're not licensed to do it. A manager basically, like my business partner and I have 15 clients.
Mm-hmm.
An agent might have, and that's fairly small, but there are a number of agencies like that. An agent might have 300.
Wow.
So, you know, they're looking and seeing what the jobs are and pitching. They don't really have that personal relationship with the actor.
Mm-hmm.
And a manager makes sure, as I said, that the agent's doing their job, that you have an agent, that you've got a commercial agent, that you've got a print agent, that you've got the right headshots, that you've got a reel, that you're in acting class, you know, all of those things. So that's basically, as I say, it's research and development and an agent and a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
But
narrows it down.
Do most actors then have an agent and a manager?
Now, most of you really kind of need to. No, it's because, as I said, the agents are so busy because they've got so many clients
mm-hmm.
that you need as many people on your team as you can get. So,
okay.
You know, most major actors will have an agent and a manager and a lawyer and a publicist. You know, they've got a whole, you know.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering how that works.
Yeah, so, you know, you might have, when you talk about that, when you think about all the pieces of the pie that go out, they make a huge amount of money, but sometimes 40-50% of that can go to, as I said, whether it's business manager, attorney,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
publicist, agents, all of those things. So, yeah, when you're making $20 million a film, that's still okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that, but that's sort of the difference. Yeah, you need as many people as you can on your team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, who do you manage that we would all know?
Leanne Huntley. Brian DeTillo, Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Don't manage Teo, but, you know, with him a lot. Melissa Archer, who's on One Life to Live.
Mm-hmm.
Britt Eklund, who is, I don't know if you know who Britt is. She actually was a Bond girl, and she's an international celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think. And then we have, several new people and some people that are really, really clicking right now that you probably would not know. But those, when you talk about the soap arena, Doug Davidson, we just signed, actually, from Young and the Restless.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about the people that you would probably know, I would say be Doug, Leanne, Brian, Melissa.
Yeah, Leanne's doing really well. We're really happy for her with her movie.
Yeah, she just completed a movie, which was terrific. She had a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to interview her, was it a month ago? Yeah,
uh-huh.
About the movie, so that was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other questions, Marianne?
Oh, that's all I can think of. Oh, I just wanted to see that you're on Twitter and Facebook. So how are you liking Twitter?
Well, you know, I just got into Twitter, and I'm having such trouble kind of figuring it out.
Yeah, join the club.
I'm trying to figure out how to get people to follow me and who I'm supposed to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so
it can be confusing.
It's a bit confusing, but I'm trying. I have a social media person I am now working with. And then with
mm-hmm.
Facebook, I'm trying to figure out how to work this because I have a fan page and I have a personal page. And and it's gotten very confusing. Because, but I'm very lucky. I've had a lot of people come into Facebook. I think it's really pretty terrific, and I haven't utilized it as much, but I was able to reconnect with Deidre through Facebook, so that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we had a question in the chat room, if there's any chance that Deidre or Drake would show up at any publicity events for the book.
You know, at this point, I don't think they are scheduled to show up yet. There's always that possibility. You know, we kind of talk about it.
That'd be great.
So it would be terrific. As I said, that's what I'm kind of trying to talk to Dee. And I saw Drake at the 45th anniversary. I assume I will run into one or both of them at the anniversary, which is next week. That
mm-hmm.
fan event is next week as well, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Out at Universal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, as I said, there is a book signing on November 19th. And I know at that book signing, I think Christian's going to be there. I think James Scott's going to be there. I'm trying to think a few other people will be there at the Grove in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe, you know, Deidre is also promoting her book.
Right.
Has anybody seen that or bought that? Because I haven't bought it yet, but I need to.
No, I haven't bought Deidre's book yet.
No.
Not yet.
I haven't.
Are you going to be at the Days of Days events, or are you doing your own events next weekend?
I'm actually not going to be at the Days of Days events. I don't plan to at this point because I will be up in Santa Ynez that day.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, that's going to be amazing. And I am again saying, if anybody has Sirius XM radio, you should listen
mm-hmm.
to Bernie Taupin's American Roots Radio on Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific Coast time. It's a fascinating, fascinating show with great, great American music.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how did you enjoy the 45th anniversary party that they had?
The 45th anniversary party.
It was on.
Why am I going ahead?
For days?
The 45th anniversary party.
That was a panel.
Oh, the panel. You mean
the show?
The party is actually next week as well. Oh, that was fascinating, actually, over at the Academy.
Okay. Yeah, because I was watching it online.
Mm-hmm.
And how was it online?
It's okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because
I disagree with some of the panels, but yeah.
Oh, yes? And what did you disagree with the panels? I'm just curious.
Well, for one thing, they didn't have John Aniston up there.
I know, it was very strange.
Dylan.
He was sitting in the front.
I didn't understand that.
Yeah, Matt Ashford was sitting in the audience, too. That was kind of odd from what I heard.
Who?
Yeah.
Matt Ashford was sitting in the
audience.
Yeah, Matt Ashford was there. Wally Kurth was there. There were a number of people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they only had so much time and whatever. But, listen, I found Bill and Susan hysterical. I thought they were great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I adore Bill and Susan.
They they were the best, yeah. And Brian was funny. He was
Brian
yeah, everybody
funny.
Loved Brian. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was always funny. We gotta,
yeah,
we gotta
he got a lot of good, yeah. He got a lot of good digs in there.
Yeah.
Brian,
what can I say? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, it was great to
I think
see
you're
a
used
lot
to Brian,
people.
Though. They understand Brian.
Yeah, I think, yeah, they do. They go, oh, it's Brian again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was
uh-huh.
able to run into so many people that I hadn't seen for such a long time. You know, so it's great. It's really great for me, especially like Patsy, you know, some of those people that I worked
mm-hmm.
with and just adored, you know, Patsy. And I didn't see Charlie. I just missed him that night, but I just so adore him. And Wally Curris and seeing some of those people. You know, Judy
mm-hmm.
Evans, you know, a lot. Of, and, of course, Missy Reeves, who I adore.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably the third part of the, you know, the Deirdre Leanne and Missy Reeves. If I could be a combination of those three girls. They're all blondes. I guess that's, I don't know. You notice I didn't say,
nice
I see myself
in
Louise. And, yeah.
It was nice seeing everybody together. It brought back a lot of memories, them talking,
yeah.
you know, together. It was nice.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how many people show up for the fan event this the Day of Days, this, you know, what's the, is it on the 6th or the 5th?
It's a Saturday.
It's a Saturday, whatever day that be. I guess
yeah.
that'd be.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
A lot of
yeah.
people usually show up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's usually packed, but people kind of complain every year that it's,
yeah, it's kind of unorganized.
It's chaotic. Yeah, it's unorganized.
You don't get to see too many.
Are you guys going to be there?
Spend too much time with anybody.
Yeah,
are you guys
I have to work.
Be there?
I'm working.
I'd love to go.
Yeah. But, yeah.
One
we're
of these
hoping,
days, I'm getting out.
We're
there.
Hoping, yeah, we're hoping next year we'll have the Diva show on the road and we'll be in LA.
Oh, that would be
a week. Yeah, we have like
that
a.
Would be great.
Oh yeah. We'll,
and
we'll
so
do
now
it.
I have a question: is there anything that you would want to see in future books?
Yeah, I know. I understand that you're focusing on the present and the future, but you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing the backstory of maybe if. Or at least it at least touched upon, like, with Anna, like, you know,
yeah,
what did she do? What did she do between 86 to 2007? I mean, you could talk about the present, but maybe, like, touch on the past a bit with Anna and Eugene Calliope. You know what? Alex Marshall, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
But, but, I mean, the ones you're already doing now, Kim Shane, Stephen Kayla, John Marlena, Jack and Jennifer, yeah, well, obviously we're all interested in them also. They're all fantastic couples. But there are some, like, obviously with John Marlena, you had to start with the present because they were on from, what, 86 to 2007 pretty much consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not much of a past you could write for them, but... Yeah, that's what I'd like
yeah.
to see. I think
a lot of backstories would be interesting, I think, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I'm going to take one last caller because they called in twice, and I feel bad if I didn't put them on.
Okay.
Yeah, 312. Oh,
it's Karen.
Hello, Karen.
Hi,
Karen.
Hi. Loved your writing. I'm kind of a late fan to the show, but some of my friends that have watched it from way from the beginning, got
mm-hmm.
me really hooked on Bo and Hope. So I'm a huge Bo and Hope fan. And I was just wondering, would you, a two-part question, you know, they have them split right now, and it's, you know, kind of like, I think it's kind of upsetting for a lot of fans because there seems to be no one that's happy on Days right now. Would you, is there anything that you would change about the writing that's going, do you still look at it? Does it kind of upset you when you see the directions of some of your characters right now?
Well, you know, anytime, any show that you've been really, really attached to and a lot of the characters that you're really attached to, yeah, it is tough to watch and then go, why are they doing that? That's not right.
Right.
But that's what I would do with the character, and I'm not the one who's writing it. You know, I love Christian and Peter, and, you know, I actually didn't just work with Christian on Days of Our Lives, but on Falcon Crest as well. And so I've known her forever, and I just think she's so adorable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, I just, when I've seen it, I don't see the softness in her that I know is there
in the character. At least that's how it feels to me.
Right.
And so for me, you know, to me that's one of the things that Bo always loved about Hope.
Right.
And so when I don't see that, I miss it. So, you know, would I write them differently? Probably, but, you know, I'm sure there is part of the audience that really enjoys the way they're writing them now. So it's just a different point of view. But I kind of always, you know, my goal is always to be as romantic as possible with people and as emotional and true to their character. So
I think that's, like, one of the frustrating, because, I mean, I think one of the, as a fan, and there's a whole group of us, and we were saying one of the frustrating things is that we saw the romance during your writing time, and you just don't see really romance on the show. I mean, that's what Days was known for, was romance and adventure, and I know the cost, of course, is not going to allow you to have the adventure part anymore, but because of budget, but you don't see the romance, and that's kind of what Bo and Hope have always been known for. So it's kind of sad to see that kind of being taken
away. You know,
away.
The truth is that, you know, as we all know, the best way to get the story changed is to not watch, because if the ratings go down and they see what's happened.
Well, they're pretty badly right now.
part of that, too, I think, you know, is probably due that they've changed the, you know, the lead-ins and all of that. So, you know, I don't know what is really causing that, but I certainly hope it turns around, because I think there's such a loyal fan base out there.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't think it'll ever go away. I think we all know that I always joke about the fact that there's the Days of Our Lives card, because if anyone finds out what I've done in the past, it's sort of like having, you know, a free pass to things. Oh, wow, Days of Our Lives. I love Days of Our Lives. Everybody knows that show because they loved it so much. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm so privileged to have, you know, had one of those cards handed to me so many years ago.
Oh,
and
I
was on the show, you know, over a period of 18 years. I was there for 9 years at four different times. So,
well, you were great.
It's been an interesting. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
You're great.
As I said, it'll always be a part of my life, always.
Well, and your book, will that be where you can only get it online, or is it going to be in a stores?
No, well, that's interesting. It's going to be, I actually got information today from the, let's see if I can find it, from the publishers, and it's going to be at Sam's Club.
Okay.
It's going to be at Barnes & Noble. It's going to be at Walden Books. It's going to be at Borders. It's going to be at independent bookstores. All starting on the 9th, and then it will filter into other, you know, larger venues as well after that. But at the moment, as I said, as of the 9th, it will be there, and then online on all of those different, you know, their websites, whether it's Amazon or Borders or Barnes & Noble, you know, .com, any of those, they're available there too.
And are you just doing that set, or are you gonna? Is there ever a possibility of doing a Bo and Hope one, or no?
There's always a possibility. You know, it's wide open at this point. And as I said, you know, these three don't necessarily focus on them.
No, I know.
But the next three, you know, at
this
point are wide
open. I'm a Marlin and John
Fantism. But, you know, the next three, and I hope there are another three, and I think it's a very good chance, you know, those are the characters that I love. So I guarantee they will definitely show up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling.
And I'll be getting your book.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Yes, you'll be doing a book tours or going to bookstores and doing signings, anything like that?
Well, they are just trying to figure out now what they're going to do as far as book tour is concerned. I don't know if I'll be going around the country, but at this point I know I'll be in Los Angeles in November. And then as it goes along, you know, as I said, the second book comes out in March, and the third one I think will be in July. So as those things happen, you know, I'm sure there'll be other promotional situations coming up too.
Oh, sure. And let us know, and we'll put that out there. So your fans can come out and see you and get an autograph and get a picture.
Oh, that would be nice. It would be lovely.
Well, thanks so much. I know we went really way long.
Oh, we did?
It was fun.
Oh, yeah.
I learned a lot tonight.
Yeah.
You're
so eager to talk, too.
As I said, I like revisiting the past myself, so it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you
so much.
And
there were a lot of really good questions. I really thought that was interesting to me, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was very impressed with the questions. questions. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you,
Thanks,
Sherry.
Sherry. Good luck to you.
Okay. Okay. Everybody, buy the book.
We will. Bye-bye.
We will. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.